except my wife. Why? Because as soon as you start telling other people, word gets around, and pretty soon everybody knows that Mark Klein has the goods, and fingers start pointing towards you. So I kept very quiet.
But tell me something else, Mark. What were you thinking that you would do with this, right? You're a child of the Vietnam generation. You grew up in the 60s.
I was thinking I wanted to go to the media with this, of course. So what I did, I wrote up a memo, basically what I knew about to that point. And I included in the memo 8 pages of the actual AT&T documents and some other miscellaneous information about the NARIS equipment and what it does. And I created a little PDF document, you know, and I put that on a disc, and I hid it away in my house in several locations, trying to think about, well, how will I deal with, you know, releasing this or spreading it? First thing you think of when you start doing this sort of thing, well, you go to the media. They're going to say, yeah, we've had 10 other people come in here with documents. How do I know what you have is a genuine article? It's hard to make them believe you. Not only that, there's also the risk of what is the government going to do to you? Who's going to defend you?
Well, you probably remember the time when Ellsberg released the Pentagon Papers, because at the beginning, people looked at him as a traitor, right?
Yeah, but he had the New York Times on his side. It wasn't clear that I'd get the New York Times on my side. Ellsberg had the credentials of someone who had secret clearance with the Defense Department. He could convince the New York Times more easily that what he has is the real deal, okay? I'm just an ordinary line technician from AT&T, you know? Who am I?
Mark Klein faced the situation many whistleblowers have faced. He knew he had proof, he just didn't know how to leak it to the media or what the consequences for him would be. I'll talk more with him about what happened next in just a moment. Coming up later this hour, a story of escaping from an authoritarian state. A woman who was listening to the story a couple of weeks ago heard about two brothers who plotted a cruise ship rescue from East Germany and said, "Hey, I know those guys." And she'll be here to recall her secret car ride across the border to West Germany. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. The whole WikiLeaks thing has become very confusing. With the recent arrest of its editor, Julian Assange, the story's become more about one man's character and less about the value to society of having whistleblowers. And even that aspect is controversial. Some say too much has been revealed with all the diplomatic cables now available for perusal. Mark Klein found himself in the midst of a controversial leak, and he doesn't regret it at all. He'd taken documents from his job at AT&T that showed the feds had been reading emails and listening to domestic phone calls. Well, Mark sat on that for a long time. But then the New York Times broke the story about the government's illegal domestic wiretapping, and Mark was watching the news. He was surprised at the way the Bush administration reacted.
And now to Washington, Dick Cheney. In the past 24 hours, he has made international headlines with his no apologies defense of President Bush's secret domestic spying program.
The vice president unapologetically defended the executive order allowing secret wiretapping without congressional or court approval.
Article 2 that specifically indicates, spells out the presence of the commander in chief.
They had no shame. They said, yes, we've authorized a domestic warrantless surveillance and we think it's necessary. And basically, you know, screw you. They were defiant, in other words. No shame.
Did that push you a little bit? Did that?
Yes, I got angry, and I said, I have the goods on them. I have the evidence. So then I went to the Electronic Frontier Foundation. They were very interested because just by a sheer happenstance, they were already preparing a lawsuit against AT&T because AT&T had turned over phone records, everybody's phone records, to the government. Eventually, they asked me to write a declaration which would be submitted to become part of their lawsuit against AT&T. I would be a witness in their lawsuit. Meanwhile, in January, I also run into a reporter from the Los Angeles Times named Joseph Men, and he was very interested in the story. I talked to him, and he got very interested. He talked to his editor. His editor was very interested. I gave him the full set of documents. In fact, he was the first one I gave the actual full set to. He was saying, oh, this is going to be a big story, front page, big exposure. It's going to be a big deal. next Thursday, maybe it was postponed, maybe next Monday. Well, postponed again to next week. Finally, he said, it's postponed because the top guy at the LA Times, who I don't know who that is, had to talk about the article with the director of national intelligence, John Negroponte. So when I heard that, I sort of gulped and almost fell on the floor again, because that told me two things. One, the government is on to me in one way or another.
Yeah, they've got your name. They know that you're shopping these documents around.
Right. And second, they're going to kill the story.
When I hear you put it in those terms, Mark, it sounds almost like a kind of betrayal on the part of the LA Times, only insofar as they've left you dangling out there after you've given them the confidence of the documents, right?
That's true.
So wait a second. Are you now looking in your rearview mirror and double-locking your door at night?
Well, this was the scariest moment, because now I figure the government knows this, but nobody else knows this. That's the most vulnerable moment, because you have no publicity and you could be disappeared, right? I began to have visions of, you know, who knows what.
Well, look what's happening to Julian Assange today. I mean,
exactly. And in fact, I defend him. When you touch their state secrets, or what they consider state secrets, they can do bad things, and they have in the past, and that's not paranoia, that's reality.
So Mark Klein was really eager to get his story out. He contacted the two reporters who broke the wiretapping story at the New York Times, and he got the same reaction, initial excitement, and then silence. But Mark was still working with the Electronic Frontier Foundation as a witness in their lawsuit against AT&T when he went down to the courthouse with the lawyers to file his affidavit. That's when the press finally decided to print his story.
Suddenly, the New York Times called me back. In April, they wrote an article, and they also published an editorial, which was titled AT&T and the NSA. And it was all about AT&T's involvement in eavesdropping. Very good. And their article said that they showed my documents. They showed my documents to four computer experts. All four experts agreed this is evidence of heavy-duty illegal government surveillance inside the phone network.
And your name's out there at this point, right?
Fortunately, I just rounded up with some lawyers. I was doing this without any lawyers. And hindsight seems a little crazy, but because then when AT&T saw this filed, that's the only time AT&T came after me. They demanded I return the documents. They demanded I stop talking about it. They demanded I shut up. And then they went to court in where the EFF's lawsuit was sitting, demanded that the judge order me to shut up, and demanded that the documents remain sealed.
And how far did they get with all those requests?
Well, we fortunately had a very decent judge. He sort of smiled and said, well, you know, I can tell the plaintiffs not to hand out the documents, but Mr. Klein is not a party to this lawsuit, and I can't order him to do anything.
Mark Klein thought this was his moment. AT&T would be held accountable for its role in government spying. He was expecting a call to testify before Congress. He'd been reaching out to them for months, especially when the press was ignoring him, and he was scared.
I started furiously sending out communications to Congress people and my own congressmen and congressional committees, and I sent them some of the documents, and nobody answered. The only one who answered me from Congress, who had the decency of answering me, was my own congressman, Pete Stark, who sent me an email saying, thank you for the documents you sent us about the National Security Agency spying program. I have forwarded this to the appropriate committees. And I never heard from the committees again.
That's kind of curious, isn't it, that they wouldn't want to know more?
Well, they were covering up for the intelligence agencies. In 2007, the White House started pushing for retroactive immunity to the phone companies because they knew that I had the goods. I had the evidence that the phone company had collaborated in an illegal act, breaking the Fourth Amendment, breaking the laws of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, which required that if you wanted to do domestic spying, you had to get a FISA warrant. Well, they never got a FISA warrant. They just did it.
And so did the government get immunity for the phone companies?
Well, that was a big battle, and it took 2 years. We went to Washington to lobby to get a hearing to say, no, this immunity bill should not be passed. But while I was in Washington, no committee of Congress, not even the Democrat-controlled committees, invited me to testify. Why? I can give you my explanation, because they didn't want to probe into this. They didn't want to challenge it. They didn't want to go up against the White House. They knew it would be a big confrontation. And they did.